Chapter 7. Because you came into the office before there was time to burn it, and could never get back to it afterwards. Wait a bit. Where is that desk now? Do you consider it likely to be in America Square, London City? Tregarthen shook his head. The house has not, for years, transacted business in that place. I have heard of it, and read of it, as removed, enlarged, every way altered. Things alter so fast in these times. You think so, returned the captain, with compassion, but you should come over and see me afore you talk about that. Well, now, this desk, this paper, this desk, said the captain, ruminating, and walking about, and looking, in his uneasy abstraction, into Mr. Pettifer's hat on a table, among other things. This desk, the captain continued, musing and roaming about the room. He gave nothing, but took up his steward's hat instead, and stood looking into it, as if he had just come into church. After that he roamed again, and again said, this desk, belonging to this house of Dringworth Brothers, America Square, London City, Mr. Pettifer, still strangely moved, and now more moved than before, cut the captain off as he backed across the room, and bespoke him thus. Captain Jorgen, I have been wishful to engage your attention, but I couldn't do it. I am unwilling to interrupt Captain Jorgen, but I must do it. I knew something about that house. The captain stood stock still, and looked at him, with his Mr. Pettifer's hat under his arm. You're aware, pursued his steward, that I was once in the broking business, Captain Jorgen? I was aware, said the captain, that you had failed in that calling, and in half the businesses going, Tom. Not quite so, Captain Jorgen, but I failed in the broking business. I was partners with my brother, sir. There was a sale of old office furniture at Dringworth Brothers, when the house was moved from America Square, and me and my brother made, what we call in the trade, a deal there, sir. And I'll make bold to say, sir, that the only thing I ever had from my brother, or from any relation, for my relations have mostly taken property from me instead of giving me any, was an old desk we bought at that same sale, with a crack in it. My brother wouldn't have given me even that, when we broke partnership, if it had been worth anything. Where is that desk now? Said the captain. Well, Captain Jorgen, replied the steward, I couldn't say for certain where it is now, but when I saw it last, which was last time we were outward bound, it was at a very nice lady's at Wapping, along with a little chest of mine which was detained for a small matter of a bill owing. The captain, instead of paying that rapt attention to his steward which was rendered by the other three persons present, went to church again, in respect of the steward's hat. And a most especially agitated and memorable face the captain produced from it, after a short pause. Now, Tom, said the captain, I spoke to you, when we first came here, respecting your constitutional weakness on the subject of sunstroke. You did, sir. Will my slow friend, said the captain, lend me his arm, or I shall sink right backwards into this blessed steward's cookery. Now, Tom, pursued the captain, when the required assistance was given, on your oath as a steward, didn't you take that desk to pieces, to make a better one of it, and put it together fresh, or something of the kind? On my oath I did, sir, replied the steward. And by the blessing of heaven, my friends, one and all, cried the captain, radiant with joy, of the heaven that put it into this Tom Pettifer's head to take so much care of his head against the bright sun, he lined his hat with the original leaf in Tregarthen's writing, and here it is. With that the captain, to the utter destruction of Mr. Pettifer's favorite hat, produced the book leaf, very much worn, but still legible, and gave both his legs such tremendous slaps, that they were heard far off in the bay, and never accounted for. 5:15 p.m. said the captain, pulling out his watch, and that's 33 hours and a quarter in all, and a pretty run. How they were all overpowered with delight and triumph, how the money was restored, then and there, to Tregarthen. How Tregarthen, then and there, gave it all to his daughter. How the captain undertook to go to Drinworth Brothers and re-establish the reputation of their forgotten old clerk. How Kitty came in, and was nearly torn to pieces, and the marriage was reappointed, needs not to be told. Nor how she and the young fisherman went home to the post office, to prepare the way for the captain's coming, by declaring him to be the mightiest of men, who had made all their fortunes, and then dutifully withdrew together, in order that he might have the domestic coast entirely to himself. How he availed himself of it is all that remains to tell. Deeply delighted with his trust, and putting his heart into it, he raised the latch of the post office parlor, where Mrs. Raybrock and the young widow sat, and said, "May I come in?" "Sure you may, Captain Jorgan," replied the old lady. "And good reason you have to be free of the house, though you have not been too well used in it by some who ought to have known better. I ask your pardon." "No you don't, ma'am," said the captain, "for I won't let you." "Wall, to be sure." By this time he had taken a chair on the hearth between them. "Never felt such an evil spirit in the whole course of my life. There, I tell you, I could amist have cut my own connection. Like the dealer in my country, away west, who when he had let himself be outdone in a bargain, said to himself, 'Now I tell you what, I'll never speak to you again.' Apostrophe and he never did, but joined a settlement of oysters, and translated the multiplication table into their language, which is a fact that can be proved. If you doubt it, mention it to any oyster you come across, and see if he'll have the face to contradict it." He took the child from her mother's lap, and set it on his knee. "Not a bit afraid of me now, you see. Knows I am fond of small people. I have a child, and she's a girl, and I sing to her sometimes." "What do you sing?" asked Margaret. "Not a long song, my dear." Silas Jorgan played the organ. "That's about all. And sometimes I tell her stories, stories of sailors supposed to be lost, and recovered after all hope was abandoned." Here the captain musingly went back to his song. Silas Jorgan played the organ, repeating it with his eyes on the fire, as he softly danced the child on his knee, for he felt that Margaret had stopped working. "Yes," said the captain, still looking at the fire, "I make up stories, and tell them to that child. Stories of shipwreck on desert islands, and long delay in getting back to civilized laws. It is to stories the like of that, mostly, that Silas Jorgan plays the organ." There was no light in the room, but the light of the fire, for the shades of night were on the village, and the stars had begun to peep out of the sky one by one, as the houses of the village peeped out from among the foliage when the night departed. The captain felt that Margaret's eyes were upon him, and thought it discreetest to keep his own eyes on the fire. "Yes, I make 'em up," said the captain. "I make up stories of brothers brought together by the good providence of God, of sons brought back to mothers, husbands brought back to wives, fathers raised from the deep, for little children like herself." Margaret's touch was on his arm, and he could not choose but look round now. Next moment her hand moved imploringly to his breast, and she was on her knees before him, supporting the mother, who was also kneeling. "What's the matter?" said the captain. "What's the matter?" Silas Jorgan played the, their looks and tears were too much for him, and he could not finish the song, short as it was. "Mistress Margaret, you have borne ill fortune well. Could you bear good fortune equally well, if it was to come?" "I hope so. I thankfully and humbly and earnestly hope so." "Wall, my dear," said the captain, "p'raps it has come. Please don't be frightened, shall I say the word, alive?" "Yes." The thanks they fervently addressed to heaven were again too much for the captain, who openly took out his handkerchief, and dried his eyes. "He's no further off," resumed the captain, "than my country. Indeed, he's no further off than his own native country. To tell you the truth, he's no further off than Falmouth. Indeed, I doubt if he's quite so fur. Indeed, if he was sure you could bear it nicely, and I was to do no more than whistle for him, the captain's trust was discharged. A rush came, and they were all together again. This was a fine opportunity for Tom Pettifer to appear with a tumbler of cold water, and he presently appeared with it, and administered it to the ladies, at the same time soothing them, and composing their dresses, exactly as if they had been passengers crossing the channel. The extent to which the captain slapped his legs, when Mr. Pettifer acquitted himself of this act of stewardship, could have been thoroughly appreciated by no one but himself, inasmuch as he must have slapped them black and blue, and they must have smarted tremendously. He couldn't stay for the wedding, having a few appointments to keep at the irreconcilable distance of about 4,000 miles. So next morning all the village cheered him up to the level ground above, and there he shook hands with a complete census of its population, and invited the whole, without exception, to come and stay several months with him at Salem, Mass. U.S. And there as he stood on the spot, where he had seen that little golden picture of love and parting, and from which he could that morning contemplate another golden picture with a vista of golden ears in it, little Kitty put her arms around his neck, and kissed him on both his bronzed cheeks, and laid her pretty face upon his storm-beaten breast, in sight of all, ashamed to have called such a noble captain names. And there the captain waved his hat over his head three final times, and there he was last seen, going away accompanied by Tom Pettifer Ho, and carrying his hands in his pockets. And there, before that ground was softened with the fallen leaves of three more summers, a rosy little boy took his first unsteady run to a fair young mother's breast, and the name of that infant fisherman was Jorgen Raybrock. Footnotes. 1. Dickens didn't write chapters 3 and 4 and they are omitted in this edition. The story continues with Captain Jorgen and Alfred at Landrian. End of the Project Gutenberg text of A Message from the Sea by Dickens. Amps by Gutenberg Edition.